Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Laud Times podcast. Got a full house again tonight. Luis Tigres English is back and ready to please all his followers that he has. This is our famous guy that we have on the pod. How we doing, Lou?
What's up, guys? A little disappointed with the result this weekend, but we're here. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. And from the north, up at there in Texas, we got Double O Nation in the house. What's up, bro?
What's up, guys? Glad to be back. Excited for Champions League. Very excited to see Orlando again.
Yeah, most people wouldn't say that.
I am.
Yeah. Oh, we kicked their, you know. Dennis, what's up, friend? How we doing?
Femenil, making us all happy, both on the club level and on the national team level. Shout out the Mexican national team for holding it down at Gold Cup so far. Long may it continue.
It's so interesting how Ovalle FC made it to the national team. All that dependency on one player, but they've played great, but I am so happy. I think it's, you know, I just want to go ahead and pick off on that. I think that's Ovalle's last season with Tigres, unfortunately.
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, they got to pay up. She's also not going to leave for the low sums that Man U was trying to offer her.
They need, what do you think is a fair price for her market?
At least Maria Sanchez levels of money there. To me, it needs to be in that range.
Whoa.
Don't tell me she's not on the same level as Maria Sanchez, man. I mean, she's just as good a winger as Maria. So they need to pay up, man.
So you're talking, I mean, I don't recall what, I think Maria Sanchez, if I recall, was a free agent, but her contract is what, $2 million over like 3-4 years?
I heard 1.5 mil is what I
heard. Okay, 1.5. Okay, so somewhere in that range. So Uche, was 350,000 transfer fee from Tigres to the Louisville team? Was it Louisville?
Somewhere around there, I believe. Yeah.
So we're talking about the transfer fee here. What are we thinking? Not the what she can get paid over her contract. What do you think that Tigres needs to bend over to in terms of negotiating?
Half a mil.
Anybody got a different number?
No, I guess my question to that would be, would you rather that half a mil come from an NWSL team, or would you rather it come from somewhere in Europe? I kind of feel like she fits better in Europe, personally. Like, if she was in Liga F or whatever the Spanish league is called, oh, be great for her.
Technically, yeah, for sure.
I agree with that, Dennis.
I wouldn't be opposed if she goes to the NWSL, though. I think her physical game would definitely change a lot more. And she's already got a ton of speed. So imagine bodying some players to go by them, even on the left wing to, you know, do them up and cross them up and chop them up like she does everybody else in the Mexican League. But that's awesome. I'm so happy for her. I think that she definitely deserves the best. And, you know, she's not the only one that's performing really well at on the national team level. Greta Espinosa, La Muralla with Cristina Ferral, Mayor getting some minutes. And, you know, I guess most people have claimed Karen Moon, you know, a Tigres.
Don't forget Delgado. Delgado's been a regular starter as well.
Alexia Delgado for sure. Yeah, just wanted to make sure to give our props to the women's who – always find a way to represent us at the highest level and in the best way possible and just leading by example, especially with, you know, this tournament and the Gold Cup. So we'll see how they do. Hopefully they make it to the finals and, you know, eventually possibly even win it. So shout out to Las Amazonas on the national team. Let's get into you guys want to start off on the hopeful side with Orlando, or do you guys want to go down the dark side?
Let's get the bad crap out of the way.
Let's get the bad stuff out. Yeah, I'm with Dennis.
Okay. So Toluca on the road, 5 o'clock game, which was completely different than in the past, but seems like Toluca has been, you know, scheduling more games around that time, if I'm not mistaken. First, you know, initial thoughts, Lou, about the lineup. There's a lot of changes in that lineup, obviously due to the heavy load on the calendar, and we have the game for CONCACAF, which we'll get into a little later, versus Orlando City, first leg in Orlando. But this Toluca game saw some changes in the starting lineup by Siboldi. Let's start there. You know, obviously your first impressions and, you know, what stood out, you know, initially from the starting lineup.
Well, I'm glad we got Garza and Aquino together on the pitch for once. We were all curious just to see how that would work, what kind of dynamic we would have with two guys that are, you know, doing pretty well as wingbacks. And so I thought that was awesome. It was great to see Marcelo Flores start for once. I think we've all been wanting to see him get minutes. And to be honest with you, before the red card, I felt like the team looked really, really good. They were absorbing pressure from Toluca, but they looked awesome on the counter. We had three or four really quick counterattacks, and that transition from, you know, being in a low block to just exploding out and finding opportunities on the other end, I thought we looked fantastic. Marcelo Flores looked great at times. I think he's going to be a kid that's going to develop really well for us. He's just very offensive minded. He doesn't care. He attacks very well. So it was great to see a lot of that movement up top with Ociel and everybody getting involved. I thought it was great. Cordova too. So, I mean, it was promising up until the red card. I thought we looked great. So, I mean, unfortunately that kind of unraveled the whole thing.
For sure. Edgar, you've been someone that has been on Marcelo Flores' corner since we got him. What was, you know, besides some of the things that Lou mentioned, what was your opinion that he was starting and, you know, obviously based on play, and where do you see his role moving forward, especially with such a shift in that lineup? And as Lou was mentioning, all that potential firepower and movement with that young approach that the team had.
So I think he did a really great job. He had a phenomenal first half. Absolutely would love to see more of that. I didn't expect him to come out as a starter against a team like Toluca. Kind of how we've been talking about, you expect that against the lower table teams. But he did really well. He responded phenomenally to the pressure. And I think he's officially going to start to be considered over Luis Quiñones. I think he showed that he's a lot better. We don't need Quiñones anymore.
For sure. Which was that alone was odd. You know, he was listed as he was hurt, and then the next day he was practicing normally. It's interesting how that happens. So, Dennis, lastly, what was something that you didn't like about those rotations? Especially, you know, you and I were texting right before the game happened, so you were excited as well about the changes. And like Lou mentioned, the one that we were probably preaching the most, the right back spot, you know, being, you know, rotated with Chuy Garza, but also having Aquino at the same time on the pitch. So something that you least liked and, you know, your impressions as well.
I thought it was not that I didn't like it, but I thought it was interesting to revert back to the Samir Pizarro center back partnership. Honestly, there's not anything from the starting 11 that I didn't like. Like, I thought it was the right call to put Nico in there. I was surprised by Fierro being in there, and I honestly thought he did a pretty solid job considering, you know, we haven't seen this guy like maybe once or twice besides this once or twice this season. You just mentioned, Lou, the fullbacks who I thought were excellent together. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, match ratings, and obviously match ratings are not everything, but they're two of the higher rated guys from our team, both Chuy and Aquino. So I was just a little bit not disappointed, but I was like, this could have been a cool opportunity to see how Purata, I know Purata probably needed the rest because he's been starting a lot, but how interesting it would have been for him to potentially even start next to Samir and kind of save Pizarro until, you know, CONCACAF. That's was kind of my one on initial, like, I'm not too sure. I mean, we all thought Angulo was going to play, and that would have been like my, like, Angulo's been playing a lot, like, let him have some rest sort of thing. But ultimately that ended up not being the case anyway. So overall, it was good to see this amount of change. Obviously not like drastic, but like significant enough to warrant, you know, the results that were out there on the pitch until some certain referee decided to get involved and, you know, turn everything to crap.
Fierro outplayed Gorriarán, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I thought Gorri was horrible, honestly.
The stats say so as well, Lou.
One of his worst games wearing our shirt.
I'm worried about him, man. Can I say that right now?
Bro, go ahead, because you're taking it right out of my head.
It's just like, what performance have we seen from him this season that has been good, like, since the final? I haven't thought of any game where he's, like, stood out. He's just kind of not a passerby, but it just seems like all that dirty work that he does is not as effective as it has been so far. I mean, he looks exhausted half the time too, so that may be part of it. But I don't know, man. Something's not right, and I don't know what needs to be done to fix it, because I obviously think he's still an important player. It's not like, you know, let's get rid of him, but something needs to get fixed quickly with him, or else, you know, that midfield depth, which is already pretty slim, gets a lot slimmer.
So how many games do we think has Gorriarán played for Tigres? About 50? 40?
Probably 40-ish.
And I can honestly say that I don't know if I can count 10, but I can tell you like 5 stupendous games. Outside of that, I feel like he has not owned up to the amount that we paid for him, as well as, you know, just the overall, like, full this display that he was doing at Santos. He has done other things where it might not be as flashy, where, like, I can say, okay, he's contributing there, he's contributing there, he's contributing there. But he went from being one of the top 3 midfielders at his position, maybe even top 2, to now he's probably, specifically with stats and, you know, just overall impressions and perception, I think he's closer to the 5 to 10, and closer to the 10 number as far as players at his position. Now, you can argue, though, that the team, because of so much space that they've given and the amount of, you know, bad form that we've had over the last few games prior to that first half in Toluca, that you can say, hey, you know, he's had a lot to work. He's had a lot of, you know, matches under him. But I think we are still missing that consistency of, like, a true great player, which we talked about when he first arrived. He started giving some, you know, flashes of good ball for us. I think that we're still not seeing the Nando that we consider like an ídolo, or we were looking to be an ídolo and possibly someone in line for the captaincy, you know, once, you know, the Nahuel, Gignacs, and Pizarro's left. So I think that that's something that needs to be talked about more. I don't think it's necessarily that, like you said, I don't think we need to move on from him. I still think he's a very important player. But I think that it's also due to the bad form that the team has, especially more so on the defensive side, with the spaces that we were given. So I'm not sure what you guys think about that, but something definitely to observe more moving forward.
Can I bring up just a couple things real quick? So I'm looking at ratings and stats from his last few performances. The last kind of stretch that he had good games was in the semifinals against Pumas. And then the one game against Pumas this season, that was like his most highest rated sort of things. And again, ratings are not everything, but looking back on it, it's like, oh yeah, he was a big part of why we, you know, kind of dominated Pumas the way we did in the semifinals. So, like, he was everywhere in those two games. And I just wonder, I mean, he's just kind of an everything midfielder. Like, he can play as a 6, he can play as an 8, he could honestly play as a number 10. I mean, we saw that at Santos, right? And I wonder if one day we could see a lineup, and I might be crazy for thinking this, but if I don't know what you would have to do to, you know, have Carioca not be the lone defensive midfielder. Like, let's say you have Carioca and Fierro as your two sixes in, like, in front of the center backs. And then you have Gorriarán play a little bit more forward with Bruneta and Lainez or Córdoba, like, as part of, like, that front three below the striker. I don't know if that's a thing worth trying, because I kind of feel like he needs to get freed up in some ways. Like, I think he needs to be more of a, hey, just kind of go everywhere instead of, you know, staying more towards the back and doing a lot of the dirty work. I want to see what it would look like for him to have a little bit more influence offensively. I don't know. Maybe that's asking too much, because Bruneta should be doing that. I don't know. That's just the thing that pops into my head.
Lou, do you think he's more of a six than an eight now at Tigres?
Yeah, I think so. Honestly, I would like to see him be the lone holding mid at one point.
Yeah.
Even if it's just one of the lower standing teams, just him by himself. I wonder if maybe it's too crowded for him, and maybe that's why he's not performing as he should be. I like what Dennis has said. The only problem is, you know, if you move him further up the pitch, you're sacrificing more quality. You know, you're either sacrificing Bruneta or you're sacrificing Córdoba. And you know, you got guys that can do it better than him at that position. So to me, the more natural position would be to drift him further back, as crazy as that sounds. And maybe even without Carioca, you know, I don't know. I don't want to sound like Don Cuco or anything, but maybe Carioca and Gorriarán don't work together. So it'd be interesting to see him kind of be the lone five for once and see how he plays.
Yeah, well, I think overall, like, it's not that I even want Carioca out of the lineup, but I think that because the team has been so parted and we've given up a ton of space, you know, I feel like our midfield has been overworked more than it needs to. And, you know, at times, you know, we haven't even, you know, we've been pressured so high, we couldn't even establish possessions at times. So I think that the players don't shine as much. So I'm curious to see if that's something they would try, Lou. Obviously, knowing the jerarquía and Siboldi, probably wouldn't happen to where Carioca gets benched. Unless, like, a rotation is happening, like a drastic rotation, like we saw in this Toluca game, and Fierro came in to start. But I do think that eventually, like, we do have to, and that was, like, why I asked about the impressions of y'all's, you know, when y'all saw the starting lineup. Because for me, the first thing that came to my head was, like, uh-oh, there it is. There's a generational shift right there. Very subtle. It's a rotation game. Nico Ibáñez, everything that's happened with Gignac and the rotations, the goals, Gignac's, you know, not so much, you know, injuries over the last 6 to 8 months. You know, people even argue the whole, like, oh, he's not the same anymore, but which is stupid. It's just he's older and he has to learn how to play differently. But that was my first thing that whenever I saw the starting lineup, I was like, oh, Fierro, Marcelo, Osiel, Córdoba, with obviously Ibáñez being a younger forward, Chuy Garza in the back. Like, that's a lot of youth. Ton of youth.
And we looked really good at times with that youth, which is promising.
And so I think that that's, like, the biggest area of opportunity, especially with them having a good first half. I think that we are closer to – and I don't know if it'll be under Siboldi. That's my other concern, because I'm not talking about a year from now. I'm talking about the 2 year shift from here to, you know, the continuance of Tigres being a team that competes, you know, stays, you know, seeking championships. I'm super curious about the from here to 2 year mark. Is Siboldi going to be the coach? And how much of these players that we saw on Saturday, plus maybe a couple, like maybe a Purata, or maybe, you know, we bring in another young center back, and then Linus obviously thrown into the mix with Bruneta. How much youth we continue to use and utilize more as we progress forward?
You have already a really good base of youth players with Linus, with Córdoba, with Osi Herrera. So to me, you really only need add one young center back, and you've pretty much already rejuvenated the entire squad. So to me,
and
there's
probably
a lot of
young goalie.
There. Yeah, yeah. Now, Wes's not going to be around forever, so.
But we can stretch that longer.
Backup. Yeah,
we can stretch that longer.
And you have a really good backup, so. Like there, to me, that's one of the least concerns I have.
Agreed.
Even though Nahuel has kind of been erratic this season a little bit.
Yeah, no, more than a little bit. I think it's definitely one of his worst seasons in terms of like perception. I think statistically, he's still there. He'll probably still end up top five in the league, but he's just doing some things that he's just like, oh, little age is coming in. We're getting wild with the thinking.
Just wait till League's Cup. That's his competition where he thrives, where he brings out all the magic tricks, both figuratively and literally.
True. But let's just, you know, let's see how it goes. But you mentioned a certain individual, Dennis, when you were talking about Adonais Escobedo, but this guy is not a certain individual. He has a ton of red cards against Tigres. He was the guy in the final that gave a red card to three of our players. So he knows what it is to play against Tigres, and he obviously likes to show the red. Thoughts on the controversial play? Was it a red, not a red? Been so many different angles. Just, you know, different opinions, I suppose, from everybody online in the social media world. Double L Nation. We'll start with you, Edgar. What do you think? Red or not red?
Not a red. It was not a red. I think it was a foul. I think he called it right the first time. He gave him a yellow, told him to, you know, calm down there a little bit. And I think that in the second half of the game, there was another play that was very similar that was not judged the same way. So either I'm nuts or he messed up.
Lou?
You know, when you first look at the play, it looks like a deliberate elbow to the face. Like he raises his arm, he strikes through, almost like he's intentionally trying to hit him. And I when I was watching it live, I thought, yeah, that's a red card. You know, he's done. But like the following day, I was reading one of the threads. I think it was Blady that posted something. I think he might have been trolling or whatever. And he posted something, and somebody went in the comments, and I thought it was interesting. They said, you do realize that had he hit him with that elbow, with the speed and momentum he had, and coming through with his arm, he would have easily broken his nose. There would have been blood everywhere. And the guy said, I don't think he even touched him. And it's funny because we all thought, yeah, he hit him. But if you go back and look, there was no blood. There was no broken nose. There was nothing. And as a player who's taken plenty of elbows to the nose, that's why my nose is all crooked, I could tell you, dude, when you get hit at that speed with an elbow, it's lights out. I mean, you bleed all over. You got to walk off. You're going to have blood all over your jersey. And there was none of that. So I think the camera angle deceived us all, and everybody went with that. But I don't think he touched them, to be honest with you.
Good point. Dennis?
Well, he wasn't even looking at him. Like, that's the thing that I don't understand. He wasn't looking at him. He was in a natural running motion, right? So, like, and again, like Edgar just alluded to, same thing happens where, was it Vega, right? That, like, clocks somebody. Yeah. And again, same thing, he wasn't looking at him, but it's identical. It is literally identical. And they didn't call, and they just call the yellow, right? So that's the thing that bothers me is that, and this is not just the R League problem, although it's very, you know, problematic despite it being a worldwide problem in our league. I don't understand the inconsistency. I don't. And obviously there's some, you know, cases to be made about corruption, but I don't want to get into that because I just want fairness, right? Like, again, the same thing happened second half. There was the crap about with Aquino, like towards the end of the game, that literally nothing was called. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? What was VAR thinking in the first half to be like, hey, like, come over, like, let's get you this angle so you can get him out of here? That's the thing that I don't like about VAR is that they will show you angles, like they will show referees angles when they walk up to the screen on initial thought that makes them think, oh, we have to get him out. Where it's like you have to think about it in context, you have to think about it with all the angles and at full speed. And sometimes they don't do that. They try to like play the game and just show the really bad angle first to make it look like it's really bad, when in reality it's not that big of a deal, right? So that's the thing that really irks me, is that there was nothing about that with, you know, the Vega incident in the second half, because surely you could have found an angle where he strikes the elbow and it's like, oh, like he kind of nailed him in the face. And he actually hit him in the face that time. That wasn't like, you know, with the Cordova thing. So I just want consistency. And I don't watch soccer. I don't watch football to watch referees be clowns, right? Like we want to watch the players and we want to watch, you know, a fair game. I'm not here to watch this, you know, foolishness that this guy has clearly shown. I'm just going on a rant here. I'm sorry. But like this foolishness that this guy has shown in the last two games that he's refereed us, between that and in the final. Like obviously the final, there's, you know, Fulgencio was a moron and Nahuel was already on a yellow when he got his second yellow. So like you can't really argue that. But it's the same sort of just vibe where he just kind of has like a, I don't know what he has against us, but it needs to stop, right? Like it just needs to stop. And maybe he's being directed by somebody in the television people or the league to, you know, do something about it. But I don't know, man, I'm just so annoyed at the clear and obvious, like, not favoritism, I can't remember the word, but like the clear agenda or bias against us. It seems like it. I'm not saying there is, but it definitely seems like it, and I'm just exhausted.
And also throw in the fact that, you know, the angle that shows where he stumbles across his foot first as he's getting to the play, which causes the change of motion and how the elbow moves. So I think ultimately, like, it comes down to bad refereeing. I think the yellow, if that's what you called, like, definitely stick by it. I think at that point, VAR was looking for an angle. Again, who knows if it was, you know, with an agenda or not to, you know, go against Tigres, but I think ultimately the yellow was fine. Let them play, especially with the second play, you know, in the second half with Alexis Vega not being judged the same way. So,
and the penalty is garbage, by the way. We totally forgot to ignore that. That ball could have bounced anywhere, and it just happened to hit off of, was it Gorriarán's leg, right?
And then Purata. And then
Purata's hand. That could have bounced anywhere after it hit Gorriarán, and it just happened to bounce him. Like, what is Purata supposed to do about that? Genuinely, what is he supposed to do about that?
Well, and to add to that, Dennis, is that got called as an accidental handball, right? No, that got called as a handball. The game after, which America played, there was a similar play where the ball hits Valdez in the chest and then hits his arm, and then he passes it, and there's a handball later. And they called that as an accidental handball. So why is Purata's not accidental, but Valdez, just one game later, just a couple hours later, that one is accidental. So similar plays, one's ruled accidental and the other one's not. So it's, you know, it's going back to your point, very inconsistent from one team to another.
For sure. I think it's ultimately it's trash. And I think that this season, you know, Alfred mentioned it at the beginning, the conspiracies and all the things that could happen once we were lead Televisa. So, right, we're here we are, and he's right, you know, or at least so far correct.
It feels like it. It definitely feels like it. I didn't want to believe it, but it's more than a coincidence that few minutes later, 30 minutes later, one's accidental, one's not. And Burata's sliding, he's falling. It's a natural motion where his hand is. He wasn't trying to obstruct the ball. It's ridiculous.
Exactly, yeah. That too. And the fact that they were just laughing about everything in the second half. The commentary, I mean, dude, the commentary is horrible just on the regular, but it was a different level of bad during our game on Saturday. I couldn't watch it.
Well, the thing with that too is that they might not necessarily have something personally against Tigres, but because they work for the television network and they know the amount of publicity that Tigres can get, whether positive or negative, especially, you know, what it creates amongst other fans and everything that we have won recently and in the last 10 years is that subconsciously you naturally start to make comments about the team, or, you know, whether that's not necessarily criticizing because they want to criticize, but because like they know like, oh, that guy's not going to come back to our television anymore, or that team's not coming back to our television. So you start making assumptions and associating your subconscious with how you feel about a certain team. And so I think to me is like, it's trash that we're in this situation because, you know, I don't think necessarily that, you know, they have so much that they can share publicly about the team that could be terrible for us. But I think that, you know, like you said, it just becomes an annoying broadcast, especially when you know that they're just hating on your team because they don't like how popular the team has become with the success that it's achieved. So moving on, I want to ask you guys before we move to the Orlando game, one thing to take away from that match.
Marcelo Flores deserves more minutes.
Like that, Dennis?
I would keep the Chuy Aquino wingback partnership until further notice. I'm like honestly really sold on that. And it gives Angulo the opportunity to act as a center back, which we've been kind of preaching at the last couple of weeks anyway. So that could create some flexibility roster-wise.
Lou?
I know I had said Fierro was dead to me, but I kind of want to see – I kind of want to revive him and have Carioca and Fierro be the now the starters there in the 4-2-3-1. I kind of liked them better than Gorriarán, so I would like to see some competition there.
Second chance.
Let's do it.
El Kimmich. That was the guy that they started calling El Kimmich whenever Florian first arrived. So, okay. For me, it's just opportunity. I think that opportunity was created for these youngsters, and now it's whether they'll seize it and hold on to some more of these minutes. Especially like you mentioned, Lou Fierro at that holding mid position. Marcelo Flores, like Edgar's mentioning. Osiel Herrera is scoring a goal once again.
Jude Bellingham.
Yeah, so I think opportunity for me is the takeaway there. Yeah. Even though we lost, I think that some things could definitely be moved forward and, you know, ultimately be a major positive aspect as we develop these players within the squad. CONCACAF, CONCA time. Back with a familiar foe. We play the Orlando City Lions. The second place team in Florida.
Yeah, they got their butts handed to them the other day. Oh my gosh.
Dude, man, it's scary this time around, man. It's scary.
You scouted that game. You watched that game. Honestly, whenever I first saw the broadcast that they were playing, I thought they were going to run all over Messi FC. But seeing the final result, and, you know, you were obviously watching and doing a little bit of scouting for Mr. Siboldi and hoping to make the call to Buffalo Wild Wings, change the game. What are we thinking? What are we thinking about Orlando City? First impressions? Talk to me about the team play overall.
So here's the thing about how they played against Miami on Saturday. A lot of what happened in that game, as far as like the goals, were self-inflicted mistakes that they had. They had a lot of clear giveaways in the midfield that allowed for spaces to already be opened up for Miami to thrive. And that's where
sounds
they
like
really...
a team I know.
Yeah, exactly. They really, really thrive off of that. Like one of them, they turned the ball over and like Messi got it out, passed it out to Gressel on the wing. He crosses it in Suarez one time, passed Gallese first goal, right? So there was a couple instances like that where they just like carelessly turned over the ball over and over and over again. And for a midfield of Miami that is not very like mobile per se, like you're talking about old Sergio Busquets and you've got a guy in Gressel who is kind of everywhere and Gomez who's big and physical but not necessarily like fast. They overran what I thought was a really strong, you know, Miami or not Miami, Orlando midfield, and they kind of run a similar 4-2-3-1 as well. and they just kind of ran circles around them. And I think that is a good indicator for us of like, how can we frustrate them to into those mistakes? How can we frustrate their midfield to get past them and like get out in space? Because they were not good in transition defense the other day at all. I mean, mind you, they're playing against some of the most technically gifted players in the world, even at their very old age. But like Suarez and Messi had a field day, an absolute field day, getting out like on the break and making stuff happen. And if we can do that, I think that'll work really well into our favor. Now, I say that, and they still have really strong players. Facundo Torres is a guy who's been incredible the last like year or so in MLS. Duncan Maguire is their striker who really shouldn't be at Orlando because he had an insane transfer saga with Blackburn, I think, in the championship or some other championship team in England. If you want to read that, you can go read that, listener, because it's absolutely insane. It like twice fell over. And they have this new guy in, Munoz or something like that. He's their new Muriel. I'm sorry. Muriel is their,
Muriel.
Yes. He comes from Serie A. He's like supposed to be, he was supposed
we
to
scouted
be
him.
Yeah. He was supposed to be Maguire's replacement. A guy who likes to play against us, Nico Lodero. That's a name that I'm sure rings a bell because he was a huge, huge cog in Seattle's like, you know, kind of big run that they had the last few years. And he just left Seattle this year. Now he's in Orlando City. He's a little bit older, but he still provides a lot from the midfield as far as like playmaking goes. And so this is no team to, you know, just kind of like be like, eh, like we'll be fine, like how we kind of were against Vancouver. This team is legit, and obviously there are ways for us to sort of combat that, but it's going to be a much harder test. And as I kind of joked the other day, hopefully Gallesa doesn't turn into prime Petr Cech like he did last year and turn into this crack goalie. But it's going to be tough either way, but there are some avenues for us to, you know, take advantage and hopefully get out, especially a good result tomorrow or today when this podcast comes out.
Lou, what a year ago we were playing them with Chima Ruiz, going through probably some of the biggest tests of some of these players. I remember you kept mentioning as we were recording pod after pod around that time, and you talked about the mental aspect. Where are we with the mental aspect, especially with the recent former games, because it seems like deja vu all over. And what do you expect out of this series from, you know, a year ago to where we're at now in recent form, and especially with everything that Dennis just mentioned about breaking down the Orlando team?
A year ago, I would have bet the whole farm on the game of us advancing. I was really confident that even though we were mentally having issues, I felt like the talent we had was just way better than theirs. But this time around, man, I'm not so confident, to be honest with you. I was looking at the game against Cavalry, and I know Cavalry's, you know, inferior opponent, but their midfield looked great. They pressed so well as a unit. And their midfielders, you look at Angulo, Cartagena, Torres, Araujo, they have Ojeda up top. They're very young, man. They got, you know, they're what, between 22 and 29 years old. So it's a very young midfield, and they're very active. They move very well. So I think this is going to be one of those games where we either win in the midfield or lose in the midfield. I think it's going to come down to our mids and how well we match up against them. We're not going in mentally. I don't think we're going in that great. You know, we haven't really had a awesome game this year, if you think about it. You know, we've had a few decent games, but nothing outstanding. And I know last season our biggest issue was scoring. I think we just couldn't, you know, Gignac was in a bit of a slump. And I think this series is going to have to be like an offensive all the way type of series. I think we're going to have to score. We're going to have to score in bunches. It can't be like last time where, you know, it's 0-0 and then 1-1 at the end, you know, to advance. I think we're going to need to score at least 4 or 5 goals this series to be able to get it done. So hopefully Gignac plays well. And I think ideally we'd play in a 4-1-4-1, man. I think we need to bring power. Wouldn't mind seeing Bruneta and Cordoba together for once. And just I know Siboldi doesn't like it, but I think we're gonna need it, man, because I think we're gonna need to score.
And it fits because he's out against America, so why not?
Say, yeah, yeah. I think you have to do that tomorrow.
I definitely think though, you're onto something about scoring lots of goals. I think we have to open up the bank, and I think that it's also a mean of like we give up three goals. You know,
yeah.
we win 5-3 aggregate, or even in, you know, 3-1 at home at their house, and then we suffer at home, or vice versa. I don't know. I think you're onto something there, Edgar. Initial thoughts, obviously adding on to what these two guys have said. What are you expecting out of this game? What are some lineup changes or things that you're looking to for Siboldi to implement into this game?
I mean, a couple things. We just talked about, you know, we need to come out really offensive. I think we can. I honestly am one of the only optimistic people about facing Orlando. I think we're going to have fun with it. But I would love to see the Brunetta, Cordova, Gignac up top again. I think it's been a while since we've seen that. But that's definitely a combination that I think we could get us easily a 2-0 victory. And, I mean, if someone like Luis Suarez can have a field day out there against Orlando, why can't we? Why can't Gignac go out there, have some fun? I think Brunetta is going to be also a very important piece this time around. I think he could give us a lot of leverage.
Go ahead, Dennis. Seems like you're about to.
I think Purata is super important tomorrow because to Lou's point about their midfield, which you're right, they press really well. Like in the beginning of that game in Miami, I was really impressed by how they were all in sync with each other until they started, you know, having careless mistakes. Purata kind of unlocks that with his over-the-top passing. That's something that's really caught my eye with him, is that he's really good at that. Like, he's obviously not all the way accurate all the time, but the fact that he's willing to go over the top and, like, kind of boot it out to Gignac or whoever else is out on the wing, that's not something that our other center backs can do really well. Like, they don't kick it as well with the power that he has. And so in order to, you know, kind of bypass the midfield, you need somebody that's willing to go over the top. And I think Borata kind of fits that role really well. So I would hope that he starts tomorrow. I don't really mind whoever is next to him, but I think just for that alone, to kind of avoid that press and not, you know, completely wear down Carioca, and I presume Gorriarán will both be in the double pivot tomorrow, just knowing how Siboldi works, even though I would like to see 4-1-4-1, like Lou just said. In order to not have them be so bogged down, you need to have times where you can just go over the top and hope Gignac gets it and try to find some space in behind. So I think he has to start.
And the familiarity of playing in the MLS and knowing the tempos of some of these players and, you know, the team itself and the coaching staff, I think that's definitely a strategic way to definitely have, you know, some leverage as far as when you play an opponent who is probably going to be more dynamic and, you know, obviously with the things that you guys have mentioned about breaking the team down. I think one thing to look forward, though, and tomorrow with the team is depth, you know, the wide, using the width of the field to develop possession and, you know, ping ponging the ball around them if we can. And hopefully, like Edgar's confidence, you know, maybe Gignac comes out to play and we get some goals in. But I think that's going to be important, which is spreading the field, you know, which I presume Linus is going to come back into the starting lineup. I can obviously see Angulo. So Angulo and Linus is probably going to cover that left flank. More than likely Aquino with, you know, hopefully Cordova and Brunetta up top with Nando and Carioca, and then Gignac starting up top with the center backs, like we've talked about, Purata and possibly Samir, which is something that I didn't point out when you were talking about, Dennis, that where you – your first impression when you saw the lineup. I thought that was the only center back pairing that we haven't seen. And it could have, if you did the rotations, and like you mentioned, knowing that Pizarro was probably going to play in this game against Orlando, you could have saved him, got him, you know, into better shape, not over, you know, tire him, and use Samir, who was in much better form with Purata, who's been playing, especially if you're going to go rotate again. So I don't know what you guys think, but that to me is probably the lineup that he's going to go to. But I think it's going to be the center back pairing of Samir and Guido Pizarro with all the other players that I mentioned. Not sure if you guys see something different heading into that game.
Yeah, I don't see Siboldi changing things up too much. I think he's going to stick to his usual. It was interesting.
Good or bad, Lou? Good or bad?
I don't care for it. I think there's some things that he can change up. I'm not sure why tactically he doesn't feel like Brunetta and Cordoba don't fit together. When in my opinion they do, especially with Brunetta being a guy who likes to occasionally drop deep to get the ball. I think there's room for both there. So I don't think that they would get in each other's way at all. So to me, they need to explain that a little better. I thought they just kind of brushed it over in the press conference. They said, tactically, it doesn't work for us. So to me, that's kind of a baloney answer. But anyway.
The few times they did play together, though, they played really well. I mean, I think it was the first three games of the season.
We were scoring goals.
Yep.
Dennis, you see it any other way?
No, I don't. It's not, I mean, I'm just kind of preparing for Quiñones to somehow be included tomorrow, which would just, I'm going to lose it, dude, if that happens. On, but like, just knowing how things are, it just seems inevitable. It really does. Even though I think that'd be such
a horrible... Why do you got to bring the mood down like that, Dennis?
I mean, I just got to be realistic, man. This is what we do at theaters.
It's like earlier in the season when Arnoldo was saying we're going to get tercero, man. I mean, I was like, I couldn't sleep that night.
El sufrimiento is real, bro. There's no way around it. There really isn't. No, I don't think there's much else that you can really...
Don't mention Luis Quiñones in this pod anymore, man.
I thought we today.
That's fine. I'm fine with that.
I feel like we could spend a whole 3 minutes talking about Luis Quiñones' departure and farewell on a pod and be done with it and be very happy.
Yeah. Also, speaking of tomorrow, I do like that we didn't have to, albeit in unfortunate circumstances, we didn't have to use Quiñac. We didn't have to use Carioca. We got to bring on Brunetta a little late. So hopefully they're a little bit more fresh for tomorrow. Knowing that I think it's going to be a pretty high intensity game, knowing that it's a 2-leg tie, like you would think that it would be a little bit slower out of the gate, but I just really feel like it's going to be from the get go. It's going to be a pretty dynamic series both ways.
We gonna have to watch out for the long distance shots, man. They have some guys that can really shoot from outside the box, and that's been an issue for us. Sometimes our mids don't get back to kind of be in the position to block those. And I think that could be an issue, man. And with Nahuel not being on his best behavior, we'll see if that causes any issues for us.
That was the thing, Lou, that I was thinking about when Siboldi in the press conference said they have a very Latino team. And he started naming all the nationalities of the players. And all I can think was, like, we're going to play against some players that can ball, can move the ball, can shoot, and they're not going to be intimidated by our squad.
Yep. Facundo Torres, quality player. Ojeda, quality. So they got quality. They got quality players, man.
Yeah. Ojeda, the guy that you mentioned, I know we scouted him. We scouted Luis Fernando Muriel multiple times in the last 3 to 4 years. Facu is... arguably top 5 player in the MLS.
Yeah, easy.
So I think overall, it's going to be a great series. I think, you know, I'm leaning with you, Lou. I think that we're going to see some goals. It just makes me have flashbacks of the time that, you know, I was there at the game, covering the game, and just the ambiance and the environment. Like, I know that fan base is gonna let the players have it tomorrow.
Oh man,
they have good coaching too. I think Oscar Pareja is one of the best coaches in MLS, and I think he adjusts in game really well, and I think he's really good in 2-leg ties, as we saw last year, really frustrated us for a lot of those 2 games. So I don't think that we should end this podcast without mentioning him, because I think he's done a lot of great work, especially in Orlando.
Is there an invasion planned for this one?
They're going. There's definitely a good amount of fans going.
Yeah, I wanted to go so bad. I should have bought that plane ticket when it was $60, dude.
I don't think it's as much as last year, though. I didn't see as much post about it, people talking about it, just flyers, you know, gather ups, meetups as last year. I think that last year worked out, I think, better because of the dates that were flipped and it allowed more people to go. And like we had a lot more time in advance to plan for that.
Yeah, we don't have a week planned this year.
More people planned to go to Disney and then obviously take the time or make the time to go to the game as well. So, or vice versa, I should say.
Well, hopefully El Tigre Vengador is there to kind of get into a fight or something. With the
shout out, El Tigre Vengador.
Yeah. But I think they'll also attract other fan bases. Like I saw that day, you know, America Rayados fans were there, which I still don't understand. why are there like I just can't imagine paying for like to go see America or Chivas, and maybe there were free tickets, but knowing La Raza, you know, an opportunity to go drink with another buddy sounds appealing. So I'm sure the tickets were paid for, so I can't relate. I cannot. I don't think I would ever pay just to go pay and watch.
Hey man, the tickets are cheap for tomorrow. They're like $20, so.
Yeah, but you go in there, you have 3-4 beers, and you paid 5 times the price of the ticket.
And how do you know that, Arnoldo? How do you know that?
I used to have dark drinking days at stadium. I'm a sober man now. At least this year.
Portland showed me that for sure.
Anyways, guys, any quick predictions for tomorrow? Off the rip, Lou, what are we thinking?
I'm going 2-2.
Ooh, I like that. Dennis?
I think that's the more realistic thing. Like, that's what I imagine will happen. I want to say 3-1 or 2-1. I think we have to have some sort of advantage with the away goals going into next week. So the thing is, this year we have the second leg at home, so we got to do a lot of our work here on this leg because we don't want to face too much pressure going back home. And it's not going to get any easier from here. This is my last point. Knowing how the rest of this tournament is going to shape out, like if we advance, we're playing either Houston or Columbus. Both really good teams, especially Columbus. Oh my gosh, if we play Columbus, that's going to be even harder than this one. Then you're probably looking at either Inter Miami or Rayados in the semifinal, and then who knows who ends up on the other side in the final. So now's the time to turn it on for our season, not just in CONCA, but probably in the league as well, but especially in CONCA, because Vancouver, that was our easiest opponent by far. It's not going to get any easier.
Got to create momentum moving forward. Edgar?
2-0 win.
Ooh. Oh, man.
Sign me up.
Yeah, I'm going 2-1 victory for us. So, positive results all around. Hopefully the team doesn't disappoint.
Hopefully not. America on Saturday, too. Oh, boy.
Man, what a tough schedule, man.
Gosh, brutal.
Probably the most competitive CONCACAF in a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
As well as probably the most competitive domestic league in a long time.
We really don't catch a break until the last two games of the regular season. I think one of them's Cholos, the other one may or may not be Puebla.
Pueblita.
And at this point, I'm just like sneaking to repechaje or liguilla, and then let's worry about CONCA because man, it's gonna be tough.
Yeah, Mazatlan next week will be kind of a little bit of a hopefully easier draw. I don't know. Maybe not.
I agree. I looked at the standings and we were what, in six. And it looks tough to get like consecutive wins in a row and not the other teams, you know, stopping them from winning. So I think best case, we get into the third, fourth spot. Worst case, we stay right where we're at and we knock out somebody in a two-leg series.
Yeah, we don't want to drop the 7.
It's starting to look
below.
like the neighbors might be running away with standings. It looks like.
That's fine. In a two-leg series, let's go. We'll take them any day.
Yeah, we don't want to drop to 7 through 10 because of the play-in. Like we got to stay in that top six.
My only, I guess, that could create an upset there is the fact that, again, we would close out on the road. But, I mean, most of our championships have been on the road. So, any last thoughts, gentlemen, on a great pod, great analysis? I think that we had such great insight and info about both matches. Definitely kicking it off with La Maga Ovalle, who Lou now thinks is better than Maria Sanchez.
One of the best in the world, man.
I just want your followers to, lynch you.
Hey, shout out to Tigres Femenil, man. Great win, 4-0 against Mazatlan. We played a bunch of youngsters. Natalia Munoz got minutes. Ana Salas got minutes. Tatiana Flores got minutes. So really good performance with, a lot of young players.
4-0 and five of your best players not there.
They didn't even have to use Demby and Jenny after they just got back from their international duties either.
Your backup center back scores a volley, if I'm not mistaken. I want to say it was a volley.
So good.
Belen Cruz scores one of the probably most beautiful goals probably in a while. Fer Elizondo comes in.
Fer Elizondo messed around and got a triple-double, man.
Yeah.
All she does is score.
And Mari Carmen Reyes, all reliable. All reliable with a yellow and all reliable with a goal here and there.
That's right. That's right.
So things are well in the world.
Deep squad. America lost. So seems like this probably, which is wild to think that it's probably the season that we're probably going to walk away with it, if everything goes as planned. And a season, two seasons ago, you were like, oh, it's competitive. Like, oh, I don't, we might not win it. Like, we got to make sure we're approaching this with the most seriousness and they come out to play. But now it just seems like we might walk away with it. I think we're just super deep. Coaching has been a complete 180, which is very interesting and funny to say, especially after you win a championship. The management of the players has been tremendous. The obviously acquisitions have been phenomenal. The performance by the players have been, pristine in terms of, giving it all up on the pitch. So I think that this is our season, back to back.
15 consecutive games without a loss, 13 wins, 2 ties in that stretch. So on fire, man.
Yeah. Seems good. Big shout out to Tigres Femenil. Big, big, big shout out. And hopefully they continue to please us with many, many more victories. And again, like mentioned, a back-to-back, and therefore changing the new aspirations to go a three-peat and not just back-to-back. So very possible. Doesn't seem like they're going to slow down from an institution standpoint as well as a sporting standpoint. So big shout-out once again to Las Amazonas, and all the famous nicknames that we know of all the players.
That's right. Hey, Edgar, how many Tigres are going to play in that Liga MX versus MLS All-Star game in July, now that that's official?
Oof. At least 3.
Gignac, Bruneta, and
Lainez.
Maybe Nahuel?
Nahuel, Gignac.
Lainez is going to get in.
And Bruneta, dude.
Bruneta's on the poster, on one of the posters. So
yeah, Bruneta's in. He's
it's
yeah,
so
he's
dumb that they're doing that, though. It's
We were shown so much in that promo video and none of side of a Rayado.
Yeah. Facts.
I loved it.
Little brother.
Even Angulo and Nahuel got a spotlight.
Angulo being in there is crazy.
Yeah. We out here, dude. The United States, the MLS knows what's up. They know, there's a reason, like I said multiple times, 6 months ago or whenever Messi first arrived and the League's Cup was just getting started, or almost a year now, the MLS knows what's up. They know who the figurehead is in the Liga MX, and that's Andre Pierre Gignac. There's no other player, no matter how good America is or can be, there's no star profile on that squad like we have. So shout out to the King of the North. So Mr. APG, Don André Pierre Gignac, big time Frenchman. So we'll see. I'm aiming to be there. So I'm excited. I hope he's there. I hope Nahuel is there. I hope Brunetta's there and many more.
Let's get it.
All right, fellas, right at the hour mark. Thanks a lot for your time tonight. Thank you, followers and listeners. Thank you for listening. Would love to hear your feedback. Big game tomorrow against Orlando. Hopefully, all of you guys catch it, and we come back home with a victory.
We might be on Spaces, so check our Twitter or X.
Absolutely, absolutely. You guys take care. Thanks again.
Take care, everybody.
Ciao.